Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case. Hello, I'm Linda. Welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. Today I'm joined by Pat, Heather, Stephanie, Teresa, and Nicola will join us from a little distance.
Hello!
Hi!
This week on Write Club, Pat will be reading to us from her work in progress, after which we'll offer our comments and see if we can find things wrong with it, actually, and things right with it. Heather will tell us about a couple of phrases she's found, rather mysterious. I don't know what the phrases are about. We'll talk about our writing lives, and then we'll talk about dialogue tags. But first, Nicola is going to ask us to
name the novel. Right, you ready? Here's your first clue. Today's book is a 1969 postmodern historical fiction novel. It was the third by this author. Following publication, the library magazine American Libraries described the novel as one of the notable books of 1969. Subsequent to its initial popularity, publishers produced numerous editions and translated the novel into many languages. It was also treated extensively by scholars and remains popular, figuring in both public and academic conversations. 2005, Time magazine chose the novel as one of the best 100 English language novels published between 1923 and 2005.
Well, What did she say? It was
historical fiction, postmodern, 1969. Now, if it was 1959, I would say The Tin Drum. But this sounds like something we're going to know well. Historical fiction. I wonder what period.
Postmodern.
Oh, well, let's listen to the next clue, shall we?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, your next clue. Part of the novel's reputation is based on its expression of postmodern literacy concerns through thematic focus on metafiction, historiography, meta-history, Marxist criticism and feminism.
Absolutely no.
I've got an inkling. I'm going to write something down.
Oh. Yeah, but it covers so many things.
No, but they're all part of the postmodern... That's my guess.
I've got a couple of feminist titles in my head, but
that might be a bit of a anyway.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I think I know one. It might be. I'll keep that in my head though. Right, let's go and hear clue three.
And finally, the easiest clues of all are: in 1981, the novel was adapted as a film of the same name, with a script by the playwright Harold Pinter, and it was set down in the West Country. The film received considerable critical acclaim and awards, including several BAFTAs and Golden Globes. The iconic image is of a woman standing at the end of a quay staring out to sea, wearing a long black cape.
I know it.
I think I know.
I got it first.
I know it.
Shall I say mine because I'm not sure I'm right anyway? I think it might be the French Lieutenant's Woman.
It's it.
Well, that's what I think too, which I...
Yeah, French lieutenant's woman, though.
Obviously.
Lieutenant.
John Fowles.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Shall we see if we're right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, the answer is, of course, The French Lieutenant's Woman by John Fowles. And I remember the film made a very big impression on me. I also really enjoyed The Magus by him.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that, Nicola. Now, as promised, we're going to hear Pat read from her work in progress.
Okay. This is the next stage in Maggie's story. You might remember that last time Brian, a sort of former sort of customer that she'd obviously had some sort of interaction with, wanted her to join him in Pano's bar later that evening. And she was very flustered and was... tried to make some excuses. It was in Pano's bar that she'd found him that night 2 years before, alone and obviously the worse for wear. He'd insisted that she join him. More ouzo, Panos, and another glass. A brief conversation with Pano in rapid Greek confirmed that he had indeed already had more than enough to drink. She abandoned thoughts of a relaxing nightcap and resigned herself to keeping an eye on Brian. She'd realised that things were not good between him and Julia. Both had seemed on edge ever since they arrived, which was really unlike them. Brian poured out the whole story about Julia's affair, about her wanting a divorce, about the arguments, how he'd pleaded with her to stay, to try again, how he'd hoped this holiday would fix it. But it hasn't. It's broken, Maggie. Everything's broken. It was as if telling her that was when he admitted it to himself. His face crumpled and a tear rolled unchecked down his cheek. Maggie reached out a hand to comfort him. Obviously he was drunk, but this wasn't just maudlin misery. This was despair at the end of a relationship. Come on, let's get you home, she murmured. The light from an almost full moon reflected on a calm, dark sea lapping quietly on the shore to the left as they made their way towards the square. It was a beautiful night, ironically, a night for lovers. Eventually, Maggie managed to steer him across the square to his accommodation. Taking his key from him, she opened the door and stepped back to let him pass. Good night, Brian. Try and get some sleep. Thank you. And before she could reply, he'd kissed her. But what started as a simple expression of gratitude quickly became something more. It was the sudden yowling of nearby cats that finally broke them apart. Desperate to regain some control, Maggie pulled back. Good night, Brian. She almost ran in her haste to get away, ignoring Brian's hushed calls. Within minutes, she'd reached her own apartment and sank down on the small sofa. Shit, 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 what on earth was I doing? Replaying the scene in her head, she blushed as she remembered how she had responded so easily. And now he'll think I'm some sad, desperate cow. I'll never be able to look him in the face again. The truth was, she'd always had a bit of a crush on Brian. She'd got on well with both of them. They were a lovely couple, fun to be with, but it was him she looked forward to seeing each year. Now she dreaded seeing him again. And Julia, oh God, how can I face her? She dragged herself to bed eventually and spent a restless night. As it happened, she managed to avoid both Brian and Julia for the remaining 2 days of their holiday. Normally they would have invited her to have a meal with them before they left. But obviously that didn't happen. She saw them in the distance once, but managed to change direction without either of them seeing her. And on transfer day, they drove themselves back to the airport, where the crowds of people milling around in the small check-in area made it relatively easy to become invisible. Since then, there had been no contact with either of them, apart from that short note from Brian. She couldn't imagine why he would have come back here. Did he even remember that night? Was she making far too much of it? Well, you're not going to find out sitting here, are you? She told herself. You better get yourself to Panna's Bar.
Brilliant.
What will she do?
Yeah, I find it very difficult to find fault with this, really. Mm. It's well written and well paced.
Oh, thank you.
The only thing I think that, and again, I'm probably wrong, but when he kisses her and she responds, that was a bit of a surprise, and I wondered whether you could have prefigured it a little bit. For example, she might have been initially pleased to find Brian on his own for once, or something like that. But maybe others think it doesn't need that. I just felt it was a little bit of a surprise.
I had an issue with my only issue with the whole thing was that paragraph. Now, what I want to say first of all was I love the sudden yowling of nearby cats.
Yes, finally broke that was wonderful.
I thought that was brilliant because it's the waves crashing on the shore.
Yeah,
but it's such an original waves crashing on the shore.
Yes,
I hate reading about all that intimacy, and I just thought that was brilliant.
Yeah,
but I could just imagine that happening.
So the cats are behaving just like they are.
Yes,
basically.
Exactly. But it breaks them apart. But it's not so much that. Quickly, that the simple expression of gratitude quickly became something more, and that she responded. It was when it's desperate to regain control, Maggie pushed back. I'm not sure that she would have been that she was that desperate to regain control. I mean, I think I just find the word desperate wrong. And I think it might have brought her back to her senses, the cats.
Yeah.
And made her think, oh, God. Right. I'm making a fool of myself, or this is not the time to get involved with him, or something
or you know, I'm a rep and he's a customer, and all of those
and he's
things.
Married and I'm taking advantage of him and all that. But anyway, that was a very minor detail, and I just think it was wonderful. I love the exposition where you said it was as if telling her was when he admitted it to himself.
Right. I was that sentence was really clunky.
No, though. I really like that. I think that's a way of and saying it was as if. So you've not lost the point of view. Mm. We're still on her shoulder, but we're actually getting an indication, you know. And I thought that was lovely. The whole thing was lovely.
I liked the surprise of the kiss, and I didn't really want it to be foreshadowed anymore because I thought it was wonderful to hit us with it like that, and it certainly turned the story. And I agree with you, Pat. I found this sentence I said here a bit awkward because it says, when I was reading it, I had to read it a few times. It was as if telling her that she was, that's what I read. It was as if telling her that, you know, and it was, I can't read it now, but it was as if telling her that was when he. I didn't get the that right in there, and so I thought maybe it would be better to be rewritten there, that little awkwardness.
Or maybe lose that. As if telling her was when he admitted
it to himself. Yeah. Yeah.
It's the that, I think, that's throwing.
The that is hitting me, yeah.
Yeah, could be.
It was as if telling her was when he admitted it to himself, yeah. Mm. But I love the what she's berating herself down here. He's going to think of her as some sad, desperate cow. I like that description so much. And other than that one little awkward bit for me reading it, I thought it was really great, and I'm interested in what's going to come of it. And it's beautifully written, as always.
Because presumably he's coming back thinking now, I've got this other relationship, whereas they don't have a relationship. They had a bit of a fumble in, you know, a drunken snog. And now, but he's come back now.
And I love her at the end going, well, you're not going to find out sitting here, are you, love? You better get down to Planet Spot. I like that.
That's her character.
That kind of brought it up again at the end. Yeah. That's sort of the sad evening.
And it takes you back to the beginning.
Right.
Yes, that character established in the opening.
Well,
very good.
I have wondered if maybe she's going to get to Pano's bar and he's going to say, "I just need to tell you, I'm getting married again."
Well, that would be an interesting twist.
If he's the one who's going to say, "This can't continue,"
why would he come on holiday to do that?
No, he's come to see her.
I know you're right, but which one will be revealed? Yeah,
which one?
Which one will die in the
end? You know, as of this moment, Linda, nobody.
Oh, okay.
But you never know.
Okay, well, thank you so much for that, Pat. It's really great to hear more about Maggie. And now, as promised, Heather is going to tell us about a couple of phrases.
Well, last week we talked about the plot, so I thought about sayings about plots. I just found two, really. One is the plot thickens.
Right.
And what does it mean? And I knew what it meant, but I wondered where it originated from. And it says, this expression comes from a satirical play called The Rehearsal, written by the poet George Villiers in the year 1671. Oh. It refers to the plot or storyline of a play becoming more exciting.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Now, I would have said it was Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting.
Yes. Yeah, I was quite surprised because I expected it to be as well because of all the other things that are attributed to him. But yes. And the other one is lost the plot. To become confused or crazy. She was so nervous she thought she was going to lose the plot. Huh. To start behaving in a strange or silly way. Heather's put everything in the wrong place. She's losing the plot. Yeah. And I certainly am.
Well, what is she talking about losing the plot in a play or a novel? Are we talking about what she's plotting in real life or something?
It's just a saying when somebody is getting a bit loopy, a bit crazy.
Okay,
yeah.
She's losing the plot. That's nice. Yeah, I'll have to find places to use that. And now we'll go to dialogue tags, how to use them, when to use them, whether to use them, and how you can keep from saying said all the time. One thing I found interesting in my looking into this was this piece on how often should you use dialogue tags, because there are so many other ways that you can indicate who's speaking. If you're writing short dialogue, where each line's only a few words, you can use fewer dialogue tags, for example. Trying to study, Jen said. For what, Ben said? Ben asked. A test, Jen answered. Do you need something? I guess not, said Ben. Well, there's too many there, and it really distracts. So if you've previously introduced a character, then the tags really wouldn't be needed. So it could be, I'm trying to study, Jen said. For what? Ben asked, a test. Do you need something? I guess not. So yeah. In that example, we know who's speaking from what had preceded it before. And so if you're writing with more than two characters, however, you use only enough dialogue tags to clearly indicate who's speaking. So that would be, I think, really important to remember when you're trying to write, don't tag them too much, or mm-hmm. is otherwise called attribution, so you don't have to always do that. Sometimes it's very good just to leave the silence. If you want to delete the word said so much, then you can use action.
John scratched his nose.
Yeah, there you go.
I wonder where she's gone in
yeah.
quotes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I've had enough. She slammed the door.
Yeah. Right. Good. Yeah. But whichever way you want to use them, you have to be sure that you just make clear to the reader who's speaking. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the most important. That's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Well, the layout helps with that as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You never have two people speaking in the same paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so if it's a continuation, you know, I've had enough, she slammed the door, and then another speech, you know, this time you need to listen. It's all in one paragraph, you know, it's still the same person speaking.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I used to spend whole lessons happily getting my kids to write, find alternatives for said,
yes.
as well as dialogue tags. And then I read Stephen King, who says...
And Elmore Leonard and...
Never use anything but said.
Only ever use said. I don't know.
Really?
I mean, I don't know if I agree with that or not.
Well, I think sometimes it can come over as a bit contrived, you know.
Mm.
Where are you going, she said. Nothing to do with you, he snapped. Well, you know.
And then on and on and on.
And on and, yeah.
It makes your writing
he mused,
look childish.
He asked.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He stated.
Right.
But then said.
Yes.
Yeah. Unless you break it up really well.
Yeah.
Can become very monotonous.
I think that's what we're talking about, actually, is one, you don't need a speech tag every time somebody speaks.
Right.
Two, I mean, Stephanie's very good at this and has taught us this, you know, the thing like, what time is it he looked at his watch? Mm. Or, you know,
it's the action.
Yeah.
Or body language.
That you know who's speaking.
He frowned. Right. You could say he frowned.
Yeah.
What on earth's going on? So, you know, it's action or body language.
I find when people put said too often, I start counting them.
Oh, you do?
And then you realise that you know completely miss the point because you're too busy.
And also, when you've got lots and lots of dialogue going over, and it's short dialogue, you know, what's the time? 3:00. What time are we leaving? 4:30. You know, and sometimes the actual dialogue will tell you who's speaking.
Right.
Yeah.
But other times I have to go back and go, hang on a minute, and I have to go.
So she loves
him.
It is a balance. It is a balance, and you do get into like a dialogue, a two way dialogue like that, and you get to the point. And you say, "Was that Did he say that or did she say that? Oh. I've lost track. Mm. And so it's a tricky balance for writers. Mm. You know.
I think
you know when you get it wrong. Yeah, or
one of the rules has to be that you don't write extended,
right,
unattributed dialogue.
Yes, like a tennis match, back and forth. That's and it's also
I think all dialogue needs breaking up.
Yes, it does, and it's a good reason to write plays as well because you don't have to worry about any of that.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, Heather has been doing that.
But dialogue shouldn't really be verbatim conversation, should it?
No.
Anyway, we're talking about tags today, not the actual dialogue.
But it is, I think you can go online and find list and list of things to replace said, if you're looking for that.
Yeah,
I think there's also a thesaurus of dialogue tags if you wanted to spend some money to buy, but I thought that might be...
Yeah,
a little.
I think, like Teresa said, if you overuse different tags, it starts to look contrived, like you're trying a bit too hard.
Right.
And actually, if the dialogue itself isn't compelling, then what's it doing there?
Right.
Yeah. And good writing is when you don't notice the writing, isn't it? Good writing is when you're absorbed in it and you're not pulled up by thing. Who said that? Or you know, or why has she said? You know, Thompson ejaculated instead of he just said, you know, or whatever. You know, it's a bit Victorian example that, but you know,
When you said that, I was like, oh.
I know that's a bad choice, but it was when my English teacher at school said it always used to wake the class up when she was reading Jane Eyre. And, you know, Mr. Rochester ejaculated.
Yeah, it caught me up a little bit too. I thought, okay, where are we going?
But that's a dialogue tag.
Of course,
but obviously,
it is.
In modern usage, it doesn't
mean
quite
something
work.
Else.
Yeah. I've got to say that my husband was quite disgusted with my daughter and I when he was talking about something and said the same thing.
Yeah.
And Catherine and I just dissolved into laughter. It took us a long time to recover, and he thought we were being very, very silly.
And so you were.
Quite rightly so.
And
that's allowed.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, and so
that's allowed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes, though, sometimes when I'm writing dialogue, and I think I write quite a lot of dialogue.
You do?
I like the interplay between Mary Magdalene and her father and then Melba and Sheriff Dancy and all the people. And I just love listening to them talk in my head.
Yeah.
And so I do use a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. Her sassy riposts are just the best.
Because your dialogue does what good dialogue is supposed to do. And it reveals character and it moves.
Absolutely.
It's never redundant,
I don't think. Well, thank you for that. I'm purring over here.
And one of the important things, or one of the ways that you can lose some dialogue tags, of course, is if your characters have distinct voices.
Right. Mm.
And, you know, but again, as with anything else, you can overdo it.
Mm.
If a character always goes, before at the beginning of everything they say, then that could get on the reader's nerves.
Right.
Or something. So, but in the case of Mary Magdalene, she just does have a strong, clear voice, and we never doubt that she's speaking.
Yeah, and so you never mix her up with Eli's line, do you?
No.
Okay, good. But I sometimes wonder about, I don't know, I'm so silly about things. Semicolons I never use because I don't know how, and I'm afraid to. I'll have to study them, Pat. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to read that book. That you talked about last week, but how, you know, when I'm doing dialogue, sometimes I'm thinking if I continue on the other side of the tag or something, how am I supposed to really punctuate that?
Well, that gets complicated.
Well, if the tag is she said, that would be a full stop.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. If the actual speech is not continuing, but even if the speech is continuing, I think a full stop is. It depends if
it's a new sentence.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's again going back to my teaching days. I used to teach if it was a comic, and the words that were spoken were the words out of the balloon or the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that goes in the bubble goes inside the speech marks, including the punctuation.
Right, yeah.
And then you add the tag outside of the punctuation.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So
that's a good analogy.
Mm.
That works for some things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it tells you where to put your question mark and so on. But your sentence, so for instance, are you going later, question mark, she asked.
Yeah.
Are you going later, question mark, goes inside your speech marks. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the commas in the air here, listeners, even though you can't see them. But then the tag, she asked, even though you finish with a question mark, which marks the end of a sentence, the she asked is small s.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the written sentence.
I worry about, yes, so now I know.
As opposed to the spoken sentence.
Yeah. That's really useful, thank you, because that gets me all the time. If there happens to be an exclamation which I try to avoid.
Uh-huh. But in speech, there will be
exclamation or question mark, then...
Would the quotes go outside?
Outside, right. And then the she like said, he said will be lowercase.
It's still considered part of the same sentence.
Oh, it is, okay.
And then you will finish with a full stop.
Yes.
That's the end of your sentence.
Makes sense.
Okay. So then you knew, if they carry on then, are you going later? I'm going to be late, or we're going to be late, because I would be capital anyway.
Right.
We're going to be late is a new sentence.
So it has a capital W.
And that would have a capital W then. Right.
But
so if you interrupt and say, I'm hoping to come along later.
She said.
She said.
So long as I can get the cat from the cattery first.
Yeah. You're interrupting one spoken sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only one end of the sentence, and that's right at the very end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've...
That's a good tip.
You're delineating the commas.
Right. When you're breaking it up in the middle, though, because sometimes the dialogue tag is at the end, or sometimes you put it at the beginning, you know.
And that's a good way of... getting the variety
right.
that stops it becoming
yes,
and so boring. when you're putting it in the middle, though, I mean, you have your first. I'm so hot, I'm burning up in here. Mary Magdalene rolled down the window. So, would you please put your window down to get a cross flow or something? So, how am I punctuating that one about the quote marks on?
Say the first part again. I'm so hot in here.
Yeah, I'm so hot and burning up in here.
Right, I'm so hot.
As she rolled down the window or something.
Right, I'm so hot and burning up in here, comma, in quotation marks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But that she goes on and she's not ending the sentence there. She adds on the other end.
Then you say, she said, comma, then you open quotes again.
Yeah.
But I'd say it's a new sentence.
So would I. See, I would cop out and I would, because actually... You could have those as two separate sentences.
Right. Two separate sentences, because you haven't got...
Okay, that's a poor example of getting at what I wanted to get at.
Yeah.
So,
but I understand what you're getting at, and I think, there would be a comma. You would end the first clause with a comma,
all of that
inside quotation marks. Yeah. Then she said...
Right.
Would there be a comma?
Comma.
And then you open quotes again and complete the sentence within those quotes.
Beginning with a lowercase.
Lowercase letter,
yeah. And then you full stop or question mark or whatever at the end.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. That's interesting. I generally stumble over some of it. Especially helpful to me was about the question mark and the exclamation point.
Mm-hmm,
because I never knew what... Because that looks like, in normal writing, that is the end of a sentence. Or a question.
Yeah.
But this is, that's very helpful. I read a piece that was saying, you got to be careful about combining action with the dialogue tag. As it was something about somebody said, biting his lip. And you don't talk while you're biting your lip, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, that was a good example.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an important thing.
And there's
thing.
One here as well. Don't use a sound that people don't actually make while talking. So don't say she trumpeted.
Oh.
I don't think any of us are guilty of that. But
no.
Trumped, maybe.
Yeah. Trumpeted. Yes, but that would be an action going with the long sound.
Well, that's really useful.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Thank you. I'm glad we had that conversation.
Yeah. And as with all things, it's about balance, isn't it? Not doing excessively... dropping all the speech tags or putting in too many or too much variety or a little variety and you know, different length. I think different lengths of speech it's quite helps to give it a bit more energy.
I think so. Well, thanks.
Okay.
And now we're supposed to talk about our writing lives today and catch you up on what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, well, we're now into November. Can you believe it's November already?
No.
And, of course, last week was half term, so I had grandchildren and friends with children off and all that sort of thing. So it was a bit of a holiday week, really. For a couple of weeks before that, I was working and being paid for it. And then lots of kerfuffle with moving house and that sort of thing. And then I went to a lit fest earlier in October, which took a couple of days out of my life, which was tremendous fun. It was the Money Lit Fest, which we've talked about before. So my writing life this month or last month, October, wasn't particularly good. But as we're now in November and it's the month of NaNoWriMo.
Yes.
I think, and my desk is clear and my family are all safely back at school and there's no lit fests or any social things to distract me.
Right.
And my house has been packed up and put into storage and so on. I think I can probably get on with some work now.
Good. Oh, I thought you were going to say you can start your novel.
Yeah. I'm getting there.
Yeah. Your NaNoWriMo novel.
I don't think I'm actually going to do NaNoWriMo. No. Well, we're a few days into it, aren't we?
Yeah.
So we'll have
It's not for me this year. I mean, I think it's a great idea.
No, but November's a good month, actually, to think about getting down to work, because you do have all the distractions of summer and...
Well, I am going to do NaNoWriMo this month. Mm-hmm. I've never done it before. I've always thought, oh, I won't, I'll fail, I won't do it, you know. But I thought, I keep going on with this silly working schedule of mine, which is so erratic.
Mm-hmm.
I work on deadline mostly, but...
This is a big problem for a lot of writers.
Yeah.
Many of us... We like a deadline. And you don't have a deadline because you're just doing your own thing on your own for your own pleasure, you know. And so it's a massive problem.
Yes, it is. And so I thought, okay, I'm really going to do it this time.
Mm-hmm.
I've done good prep work in October, getting ready for it. I haven't quite done everything, but I think I've enough so I won't be terribly interrupted with the writing. I have told Hal that I'm going to do it, and Hal is extremely annoying about things sometimes. Like, it's 10 minutes to 11, we have to leave at 11:30. And I get up in the morning, and he recites to me, you have write club today, or today you have book club, or and he's really very, he keeps up with things a lot, and he... annoys me into doing things sometimes. Like if I say to him, Hal, I'm going to do NaNoWriMo and I explained what it was, he will bug me every day.
Yeah, so he's keeping on top of you.
Yeah, he will. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be will be helpful.
And also the thing that I think, you know, you said right at the beginning, you know, I'll fail. You can't fail. I mean, okay, some people, a very, very few people will write 50,000 words in November, but some will write 10, some will write 5, some will use the time to work on plot, to evolve something. Whatever you do is a gain and a win.
That's true.
There is no failure. Yes, go for 50,000. Yeah. If you miss it by a mile, by half, by three quarters, you will still have achieved a lot in that time. So...
You have done it before, right?
I half-heartedly had a go. But, you know, I wasn't the writer I am now.
Okay.
Then.
Yeah.
You know, and I did sort of think I could just sit down without an idea in my head. And sometimes people do that and produce stuff. But if I was doing it, I would do what you do and make a plan and be ready to hit the ground running. And also don't beat yourself up if you don't make today's target or tomorrow's target.
Mm-hmm. Just quite right.
But can I ask it? Is this Mary Magdalene?
Yes.
Yeah. You're not starting a whole new project.
No, I'm not. And at this point, I realized I put things together the other day, and I've written so much on this. I must have written like 150,000 words from time to time. But then if you saw the post I put on Write Club, the podcast Facebook page, Facebook group about the cup.
Oh, yeah.
Final draft, first draft, second final draft, et cetera. So most of it was either redundant or bad. And now when I straightened everything up this week, I realized I have right about 20,000 words. Mm-hmm. So if I start from there, mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty good bit. Yeah. And mm-hmm, yeah. if I get a lot more, I'll be very happy.
Yeah. Good.
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 Excellent.
You've got our backing all the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I'm carrying on with my little Greek village, but I also attended the Lit Fest and went to one of the workshops. And I always find, you know, I can struggle to, you know, to get something written, and like most of us, it's all about the deadlines. I'll sort of put things off, and then when I've got a deadline looming, I think, oh, I better do. And I'm only doing, you know, like 600 words or something. But I go to something like a workshop, and somebody throws an idea at you and says, right, write. And ideas come, yes. And I write. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre.
Yes.
But
maybe we should meet more often.
Mm.
And that's why some people like writing prompts. But if you've got an ongoing project, writing prompt doesn't necessarily help you. But one of the workshops which I did with Alison Robertson, she brought a suitcase with objects in, and you had to develop a character and a scenario from that object. It actually tied in very neatly, not with Ronella, but with a novel I'm not writing. One of the novels I'm not writing at the moment. But it actually did, you know, it set that up quite nicely for me. So it just depends. But, these workshops are brilliantly inspiring.
But, you know, what I produced there, I thought, oh, there's mileage in that.
Yes.
So I've been sort of looking at that and having a little play around with it. Whether that's a short story, a long short story, or a novel, I don't know. I don't think I want to commit to a novel. I think I'm too, I know myself too well.
And I think, you know, for myself, I'm kind of over that thing of like, I'm not a writer if I haven't written a novel.
Right.
There are lots of different ways to be a writer, and being a novelist is not the be all and end all. It's not for everybody. And really, with short stories and things, you've got different opportunities for publishing on you know, magazines, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff on the internet looking for material, looking for content. Yeah. So, you know, competitions you can enter. So,
it's
not the be all and end all to be a novelist.
No.
I've got two things on the go at the moment. One that you'll have to wait till next week.
No.
I've had an idea in my head for a while about a cruise ship. And I've kept trying to write a story. And for some reason, the story goes its own way and not the way that I thought it was going to go. But I say you'll have to wait for next week. During Litfest, my husband and a few other people walked the Manny. And I know Teresa's done the walk before. I didn't walk. I was the support team between stops. They walked about 120 kilometres, which is amazing. But I've been asked to write up an article on their walk. So it's out with the walkers for comments at the moment, because I'm trying to make it that it's not like just a list of places that they walked, but trying to put some of the anecdotes in. One of them, which is my husband, walked into a church and the rain was torrential, you know. And Roy walked into the church, put his foot down, and suddenly a clap of thunder reverberated around the place, and lightning, forked lightning. You know. So the whole thing is, you know, Roy cannot go into a church again.
And, you know, quite a few of the, just to explain for those of you who don't know, the Manny is a peninsula in southern Greece.
Great place to go for a lit fest.
And so there is a walk, a little brochure you can get from insidethemanny.gr, which is Walk the Manny in 9 days.
Uh-huh.
And it's a great thing to do, and October's a good time of year to do it. But, yeah, there are lots of little churches along the way, and many of them have already got earthquake damage as well. So if you go in during a storm, it can be quite scary. You think, is the roof going to hold, or, you know. But that sounds like a really interesting project.
Great
stuff.
I didn't walk, but I did find it great to be there, because I felt part of it, because every night when they came back, they were full of the stories and the anecdotes of what they'd done. So I actually felt as though I'd taken part.
And have you got a home for that article? Are you going to submit it
Inside
the Manny
magazine?
Excellent. Ah, right, yeah.
Yes, I was volunteered.
Well, I don't know whether to say the plot thickens or I'm losing the plot. Basically, I'm plotting. And, you know, I've got sort of, I think, past the middle point of my Ronella novel. And I'm thinking a lot about the climactic scene, which is obviously she has to confront the one-eyed woman and overcome her. But I've got these other characters, as you know, from the last time I did my work in progress, which is this gang of children who have captured Ronella. And I'm not sure how that's good. You know, I don't, they could befriend her, support her, help her, or they could be against her, or there could be a mixture, like, you know, Tolly recognize a connection between them and helps her, but the others are very much not on her side. So I've got all these things to work out, and I'm thinking about it and doing workshops at the Manny Lit Fest. I did one with Liz Harris about plotting, and reading, as I mentioned last week, the Into the Woods, is helping me a lot. And I actually think it's quite good to take a pause and think, because if I just go on and write it now, it's not going to be as good as it will be if I put a bit of thought into it. And it's a bit like what I was saying last week about being a pantser or a plotter, and I'm trying not to be a pantser at this point and to take a pause, isn't as good an excuse as Stephanie has for not writing. But it's mine.
It's your excuse.
And you're going to stick to it, I guess.
Here's an update on my writing life. Last time, you may remember, I was feeling very discouraged, and I was going to surprise you today by saying I'm picking up on the screenwriting baton again. I was been inspired by several things over the last couple of weeks. First thing was the Poets of Instagram. I subscribed to a lot of them, and I read a few articles about some of the best people, and I've been reading a lot of poetry on Instagram, and I've even written a few. The long rainy days in England, watching TV and films. I don't normally watch films, but the kids like them, so we've been watching them together. I've found a local writing group, which obviously isn't going to be anywhere near as good as my Greek one, but it's on a houseboat in Shoreham, which is quite romantic. 10 people who get together on a monthly basis, so I'll report back on the first one of those next time round. I think being surrounded by creativity and creative young people has helped a lot. Nelson's in his second year at university doing music production, and he comes in and goes into his room and starts making music all the time. And that's sort of a backdrop to what's happening. And Phoebe's always film and editing for social media. The other thing is, I think we've watched some good hip-hop documentaries together, and watching programmes about inspiring young people being creative has made me feel like I wanted to get creative again. I started journaling again, mainly because I'm sort of here in a different place and I wanted to make sense of what I was feeling, and that helped a lot. And then I accidentally did the FutureLearn course again. I think I did it before I was in, or when I was in Australia, on screenwriting. Teresa recommended it, and I went and just did it again recently, because I've got this idea in my head that won't go away for a screenplay for a TV series. Then I looked at my bookshelf, which only got about 5 books in it, because I gave everything away before I moved back to England. I found that I had Robert McKee's dialogue book. I think I had story, but I think I might have given that away when I left Greece. Dialogue is pretty good, so I'm working my way through that. I was looking at the internet because I thought, I'm back in England, I might as well take advantage of being able to get to courses and events and things. And there was a big screenwriting event and in London. I thought, oh, I just missed that. If only I'd looked a bit earlier. So that sort of led me into this rampage through screenwriting resources online, especially geared at the UK. And I found a guy called Philip Shelley, who is a screenwriter himself, but he also runs Channel 4 screenwriting course, which you have to apply to go on to, and it involves going to work for 2 weekends in a year together with other, it's like a writer's room set up, and you don't have to pay for it. They pay you, in fact, but you have to apply and be accepted. And I've just missed the deadline, so that means I've got a year to work towards applying for it next year. So I think I'm going to do that. And he also offers a script reading service. As you may recall, I got my first script I wrote for a pilot critiqued by the bunch in America. But I think I'm going to get him to look at my first script for this new idea that I've got. But he also does mentoring. He does a 6-month mentoring service. So I'm thinking that might be a good thing for me to invest in, because I've just landed a big client and I might as well spend some of that money on myself. So I'm feeling a bit more encouraged. I'm feeling a bit more up for it. And I'm going to go down the screenwriting route for the time being, leaving Brianne to languish in a drawer until she gets a little feistier. Can't wait to hear what you're all up to. Speak to you soon. Bye.
So you can see we're all involved in our own ways and doing things. Steph is preparing because she's getting all of this other stuff out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's terrific. It's almost time to end now. But before we go, there's time for Steph to tell us what she's reading at the moment.
Right. Well, this is a book that I have anticipated and looked forward to reading all year. It's The Testaments by Margaret Atwood, which is actually has been announced as one of the joint winners of the Booker Prize this year.
Yeah.
So I went to it. Obviously, The Handmaid's Tale's been on television and it's gone beyond where the original book was, the Handmaid's Tale book. But I do remember The Handmaid's Tale from some years back. So when I read it, so I was actually quite surprised by, I've been quite surprised by The Testaments because it's actually what I would say is much more accessible, perhaps, than The Handmaid's Tale, much less literary. It's intelligent, but it's not highbrow literary prose. It doesn't have the same gravitas, perhaps, as The Handmaid's Tale. So it's an easier read. But it's clever because for those people who are not familiar with the story behind this, and I can't think there are many out there, but Margaret Atwood wrote The Handmaid's Tale and it ended on a bit of a cliffhanger. The television series that was made in the last few years took that book and made that series one. And then they developed several other series, which Margaret Atwood was involved in plotting, but didn't actually write books on them. And this book is a follow-on from both The Handmaid's Tale and makes some reference to the TV series. So it's quite clever because she's obviously written it after being involved with the TV series. So The Handmaid's Tale TV series went way beyond The Handmaid's Tale, the book. I would say, from what I've read so far, it's not particularly subtle or nuanced. The narrators in this instance are Aunt Lydia, who's one of the aunts, well, the lead aunt, basically, and two teenage girls. And it's set 15 years after The Handmaid's Tale ended, which will account for all the TV series in between. But it's well-paced, it's page-turning. I'm not sure if that's because I've watched the TV series and I've got a thirst for it or what, but it's actually, for a literary novel that's won the Booker Prize, it's incredibly readable and accessible. So I'd say to everybody, get it and read it.
Okay. Do you think you've got to have seen Series 3 before you read the book?
No, because you can just read the two books. The two books stand alone. I just think people should read it because I know a lot of people are put off by Booker Prize winners because they think they're going to be hard work. And it isn't. It's as I say, it's almost commercial fiction, but quite literary, but not difficult or highbrow or intense or looking forward anything to it. Like that. No, I'm enjoying it. It's great.
Well, I'm going to have to start from the beginning because I haven't yet read The Handmaid's Tale. So,
or I reread it recently because of all the talk, but I didn't watch any of the TV.
Well, maybe I should just watch the series on TV to catch up and then read the last one. Yeah. Well, it's time for closing now again. We've come to the end. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for tuning in and thanks for going to the podcast page on Facebook. I hope you'll subscribe to iTunes or Stitcher. Every new show is automatically downloaded wherever you want it. Join our Facebook group. Just search for Write Club the Podcast. Please leave us a review. Tell us if you want to hear about something, if there's something you're interested in. Tell us what you're doing or just give us a rating. It will help a lot. Tell a friend about Write Club. Help us grow. And we'll be back again next week at the same time for another episode of Write Club the Podcast. So, y'all come back, you hear? Come on. Bye.